Welcome to KUI News, brought to you by Student Media and UI's student newspaper, The Argonaut. KUI News is committed to bringing you the most current news, sports, opinions, and entertainment information within the Mollusca community, the country, and the world. KUI 89.3 FM is a student-owned and operated radio station, and all news and opinions are those of our student journalists and not those of our university. KUI News is underwritten by UI's own student magazine, Blot. Blot is on stands twice a semester on UI's campus and throughout the Mollusca community. For more information about Blot, navigate to blot.uidaho.edu. And now for today's newscast.
Welcome to KUOI News. It's Friday, November 11th, and I'm your host, Britt Kaiser. Happy Veterans Day. I'd like to take a moment to thank those men and women who have fought for our country and our freedom. For today's newscast, we have, in the news section, a recap of the local Moscow elections, an overview of Wednesday's symposium titled Open Access, Citizens, Media, and Government, and information regarding Veterans Day at the University of Idaho. For RAR, a piece that compares and contrasts the two comic companies, DC and Marvel. For sports, a recap of the entire women's soccer season, and a preview of Saturday's football game versus BYU. And last but not least for opinion, a roundtable centered on the pros and cons of Tom Luna's Students Come First Education Reform Bill. First, here's Anya with information regarding Veterans Day at UI.
On the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, on the 11th year of the new millennium, veterans at the University of Idaho and across America will gather in spirit to honor those who have served in the U.S. military. While one day a year is taken to recognize U.S. veterans, veterans at UI have resources at their fingertips year-round. The UI Veterans Resource Center officially opened its new offices in the Idaho Commons, Room 305, this September, a space Dan Button, Veterans Advisor, says is a great central location for them. Sergeant Bo Tanner, President of the Veterans at the University of Idaho, said the Veterans Resource Center is there to advocate for veterans and provide them with support, resources, and advising. However, the most important aspect of the center, Tanner said, is the social community for veterans to come together and share experiences. Button and Tanner said the community on campus is one of the most welcoming and supportive to veterans that they've ever seen. There are several events taking place today honoring veterans on campus. Starting at 7 a.m. and going until 9 a.m., there is a veterans breakfast at Bob's Place in the Wallace Complex. Servicemen and women who bring a donation of canned food will receive a free breakfast at Bob's Place. At 11 a.m. on the front steps of Memorial Gym, members from all military branches and the university will gather to honor servicemen and women with a wreath-laying ceremony, a moment of silence, a reading of In Flanders Field, a playing of taps, and other traditions. From 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., a fallen comrade table in the Idaho Commons food court will be guarded by UI ROTC volunteers with a fallen comrade ceremony at noon. For KUOI News, I'm Anya Sandali.
Thanks, Anya. Open government and access to records is important for all citizens, including students, said Steve Smith, University of Idaho School of Journalism and Mass Media lecturer. Wednesday's symposium, titled Open Access, Citizens, Media, and Government, centered on this theme. Betsy Russell, Boise Bureau Chief for the Spokesman Review, said America's democratic form of government would not work without openness in government. The symposium included a documentary film titled Fighting Goliath, Megalodes and the Power of Protest, created by JAM seniors Hans Guski and Ilya Pinchuk. The film followed Idaho residents Borg Hendrickson and Linwood Lahey in their battle to stop the Idaho Transportation Department from moving oversized oil refinery equipment up Highway 12 from the Port of Lewiston to Billings, Montana, and to hold the state government accountable for informing the public of the project's details. Guski, film director and editor, said a misconception is that the documentary is specifically about megalodes. "The film is not about megalodes coming through town," Guski said. "We tried to make it as objective as possible while focusing on the fact that ITD was not following its own regulations as far as public information and permitting over legal size loads." A panel discussion titled In the Sunshine, Holding Government Accountable, followed the documentary and centered on the issue of public access. Panel participants included Hendrickson, Lahey, Russell, and William Spence, reporter for the Lewiston Tribune. Smith served as the panel's moderator. The panel focused on laws that promote access to government documents, such as the Freedom of Information Act on the federal level and the Idaho Open Meeting and Idaho Public Records laws at the state level. Last in the series of events was a lecture by Russell titled Open Government, Why It Matters. Russell focused on the aforementioned Idaho state laws that guarantee an open government. She cited specific local examples where citizens use these laws to hold government officials liable. Russell talked about the action UI took to release former Assistant Professor Ernesto Bustamante's personnel records. Now, there is an exemption for personnel records of a state employee or public official, or a former state employee or public official, unless that official signs a release, Russell said. But in this case, if the former employee is dead and can't sign a release, does the exemption apply? Should it end at death? Should it last forever since no one can sign a release? In conjunction with statewide media organizations, UI took the issue to court, Russell said. During the day, students also had the opportunity to exercise their right by typing messages and questions to people of authority using typewriters. Smith said the symposium served as an important reminder to all citizens. I think citizens require a constant reminder, and students are citizens, that we travel on the edge of the knife blade in terms of access issues, Smith said. You have to be constantly vigilant, constantly aware, in order to advocate for the kind of openness that we require in a democratic system. And students are in as strong of a position to advocate as anybody else. For KUOI News, I'm Britt Kaiser. Now, here's Katie with a recap of the local Moscow elections.
In Tuesday's city council election, Tom Lamar won overall with 30% of the vote. Wayne Cross and Dan Karskallen both received 26% of the vote, obtaining the three city council positions. Aaron Amet, the only non-incumbent, lost with 17%. The levy for the Moscow School District that allows the Board of Trustees to levy an increase to the indefinite term supplemental levy for $1,970,000, which would make the annual levy $9,586,000, passed with 58%. This levy will apply indefinitely and will pay all expenses for maintaining and operating all of the schools in the Moscow School District. For KUOI News, I'm Katie Sword.
Thank you, Katie. And now over to Molly to kick off today's RAR section with a piece that compares and contrasts comic companies DC and Marvel.
Back when comics were cool and didn't have an online option, DC and Marvel produced a DC vs. Marvel comic. Annie Winkle, fan of both DC and Marvel, said, "It's a comic where DC and Marvel team up, even though they're competitors, and fight their own superheroes against each other," Winkle said. "All the different characters fight each other, and people would send in their votes to who would win the next comic." More recently, the two companies released Marvel vs. DC with Zombies, where once again the characters are fighting against each other, but as zombies, she said. Winkle feels Marvel and DC have equal amounts of famous characters. Between the ages of 7 and 14, she practically lived in a place called Captain Comics in Boise. Captain Comics had barrels full of comics, Star Wars, Pokemon, and Sailor Moon, everything she liked. Zachary Lichty, a Marvel fan, said they have a lot more in-depth characters with better background stories than DC Comics. Marvel is made up of different universes. Anyone can pick up a piece of paper and write a comic about Wolverine and send it into Marvel. If they like your story, they'll run it, Lichty said. He said Marvel isn't just considered a company, it also is considered a universe. There are different worlds and dimensions in Marvel, so the same character can be drawn 20 different ways. That's what makes Marvel confusing to people, Lichty said. Tabitha Simmons, owner of Safari Pearl, said she has always been a fan of DC and the independents. Simmons said she's recently been reading a lot of Marvel, and there are quite a few characters that she decided she liked. Simmons started reading comics in the late 80s, but said she's been a Wonder Woman fan since the TV show in the 70s, which led her to comics. Both Marvel and DC are rebooting characters' titles, Simmons said. DC has formed the New 52. DC has rebooted every single title, and even Detective and Action Comics, which have been running since the 30s, have new number ones, she said, which means the mythology of each character has been refreshed. Superman, for instance, he had just kind of grown stale. He was fighting the same old villains, and there was no drama, really, Simmons said. It was just the same thing every month. Now Action Comics is about Superman as a young man before he even decided to become a superhero. Marvel is rebooting their characters as well, but not in as big of a way. They have rebooted The Incredible Hulk and other characters, but the company is doing it one title at a time. Simmons said it hasn't had the same impact, which is unfortunate. The New 52 has revitalized DC fans. People they haven't seen in 10 years are coming to Safari Pearl to check out comics again. It's an amazing time to be a superhero fan, whichever one you choose, Simmons said. For KUOI News, I'm Molly Spencer.
Circles and Squares by We Were Promised Jetpacks. Now, here's Sean in the sports section with a recap of the entire Idaho women's soccer season.
On the soccer pitch, the Idaho soccer program could lay claim to its most successful season to date. A second consecutive conference tournament appearance and an appearance in the WAC semifinals are unprecedented achievements for the Vandals. But the team fell short of its ultimate goal, winning the entire tournament. The Vandals overcame an early goal deficit in their opening round match against San Jose State to pull off a 2-1 victory, their first conference tournament victory in program history. However, the Vandals were cut down the next day by eventual champions Utah State. It was a contrast to last year when the Vandals were ousted by Fresno State in ugly fashion. Still, this season, the Vandals took one step closer to their ultimate goal, playing in the NCAA tournament, but it's a goal that will have to wait until next season to be fulfilled. On the way, the Vandals fought a lot of adversity this season. There was a point in the season in which the team had lost 5 of its last 6 matches. During that span, the Vandals only scored 3 goals. Their opponents, on the other hand, put away 13 goals on the Vandals. To make matters worse, 2 of those losses put Idaho in a 0-2 hole in conference play. That was until the Vandals exploded with a 4-2 victory over Hawaii at home. From that point on, the Vandals only lost twice more to conference opponents, both times to eventual conference champion Utah State. Idaho also dealt with the bizarre scenario of having playing 4 different goalkeepers during the course of the season thanks to injuries and red cards. It was something that keepers coach Grant Williams said he had never seen during his time in the game. The Vandals will hit the pitch again next fall, and they will do so with every single player who logged minutes in the conference tournament returning. They will also have their full complement of goalkeepers, including the senior starter from this year, Liz Boyden, coming off of a medical redshirt. The team will be incredibly experience laden. Up to 8 seniors will vie for starting positions in the fall, and that includes leading goal scorer Chelsea Small, as well as captain defender Lauren Layton. The second leading goal scorer, Bailey Hewitt, also returns as a junior. As for the goals for the program on the pitch, they remain a constant. Scholler says his aim is to make the NCAA tournament. For KUOI News, this is Sean Kramer.
Thanks, Sean. And now over to Madison with a preview of Saturday's football game versus BYU.
Coming off their first win in conference play, the last thing this University of Idaho Vandal football team wants is to hit the road again. But a weekend matchup with Brigham Young University awaits Saturday evening in Provo, Utah, with the 6-3 Cougars. After a thrilling 32-29 come-from-behind victory on the road against San Jose State last weekend, new quarterback Taylor Davis and what looked like a high-octane offense will look to keep their foot on the pedal against a big and strong BYU front seven. The star on this offensive side of the ball for UI last weekend was running back Kama Bailey, who for the most part has fell under the preseason expectations set by the coaching staff. With the shaken-up Princeton McCarty and Troy Vidal still out, Bailey ran for 163 yards and 2 scores. The reemergence of Ryan Bass should also help take some pressure off Taylor Davis. On the defensive side of the ball, last weekend's game started off in a rocky way. San Jose State was able to jump out to a quick 17-0 lead in the first quarter, a performance that had some worried for the Vandal defense. The team, though, stayed resilient and bandaged the wound, allowing the Spartans to only score 12 more points. Corey Toomer had another big game for the Vandal defense, along with Conrad Scheidt and Trayshawn Robinson. The three led a strong linebacking core, which will need to stay tough in the cold weather of Provo to stop a talented and fast BYU offense. This is the second time in 3 weeks that the Cougars will face a team from the state of Idaho, after securing bowl eligibility against Idaho State 2 weeks ago. BYU is coming off a hard-fought loss against TCU last week, though, something the Vandals may be able to take advantage of. BYU does run a two-quarterback set led by junior Riley Nelson, who is a double threat for the Cougars in both the air and on the ground. They will also play sophomore Jake Heaps, who is more of a traditional passer. Both quarterbacks, though, have thrown for over 1,000 yards so far this season. On the other side of the ball, big is the name of the game for BYU. The Cougars run a 4-3 defense, and the three down linemen weigh over a half a ton combined. This will be a serious concern for Idaho's front five, who allowed 5 sacks last week, 4 of which can be blamed on left tackle Matt Cleveland. If UI are to be successful on moving the ball, they will have to get around players like Brandon Ogletree, a junior linebacker, who leads the team with 53 total tackles, 1 interception, and 1 fumble recovery. Players like Ogletree will be looking to take advantage of a young Davis. Kickoff this weekend will be at 6:15 Pacific time and will be aired on BYU TV. The Vandals will be back home next weekend to battle Utah State in the last home game of the season. This will also be Senior Day for Idaho. For KUI News, I'm Madison McCord.
Promised Jetpack's track titled Picture of Health. Now over to Elisa hosting today's Opinion Roundtable on Tom Luna's Students Come First bill.
Welcome to this week's Opinion Roundtable. I'm your host, Elisa Aguirin, and joining me today are Madison McCord, Elizabeth Rudd, and Jens Olson. Today we are discussing the pros and cons of Representative Tom Luna's Students Come First legislation, which was recently passed and requires high school students to take 2 credits of online classes. Elizabeth, in your opinion, what are the pros and cons of online classes?
Well, for me, I don't think online classes have much of a pro. I've taken a couple in my time here at the university and have literally learned nothing from them. I think it deprives students of a one-on-one experience with teachers, which is incredibly beneficial to the learning process. Online classes really just limits how you can tell and teach and provide students with information. You have one outlet, one form, and that's just a computer screen. In person, you can explain it multiple ways, and you can use pictures, diagrams. You can even have another student explain it to that student if they're not understanding. There's just so many more opportunities to really explain the concept for students to understand. So honestly, I don't have any pros for online classes.
Madison, would you like to share your experience with online classes?
Sure, yeah. I've taken a few online classes, and I'm going to agree with Elizabeth for the most part that they're not as beneficial as in-person classes. The one-on-one connection is nice. But the one thing I'm going to disagree with is the outlets. I think actually with the class setting, you have one outlet. It's your professor, and your peers are helpful. But with online classes, the one thing that you have is you have unlimited outlets. You have the internet in front of you. Not the answer that's put in the book is exactly the right answer. There's different ways to look at stuff, and the argument of saying there's pictures and diagrams, well, pretty sure there's pictures, diagrams, videos, interactive elements, everything online. For the most part, the one-on-one experience is nice and it is much more helpful from what I've seen, but just saying that it limits your experiences isn't true. It actually opens up a whole world of possibilities that you can research.
Yeah, but all those possibilities that you're talking about, websites, links, all this, they don't mean anything if the student doesn't understand it, if there's not someone there to explain it. That's why a teacher setting in a classroom where the teacher's there to present this information, present these websites, help them understand what it means, is completely better. You can't sit there on a computer and look through a website and ask the teacher because there isn't a teacher there.
The other thing that we have to remember, too, is when we talk about one-on-one settings, classes are not one-on-one. It's not you and a teacher. For the most part, especially for university students, but we'll stick with high school, you're usually in a class of about 30 people. And one-on-one attention you can get, but also if you're maybe behind the pace that the class needs to go, because 29 other people are on there, with an online class you can go at your own pace, and you can learn a little slower and figure everything out. Granted, again, you won't have the teacher there that can maybe give you the in-depth stuff. But if the class moves faster than you need to, with an online class, that's just not the situation because for the most part, you're able to move at your own pace.
And that's what I think is the problem with Luna's plan. Unlike some other plans like they're trying out in Southern California with a Khan Academy, where students go and learn online with tutorials and on-screen lectures, where that's the part of teaching and the classroom that is very impersonal, not one-on-one with the teachers, where they do that online and teachers can track their response, see how long they spend on each lecture. Students can repeat it in case they don't understand anything. And then they get up to speed. And then I think that's where they should transfer into the classroom and they could have shorter actual classroom segments. So instead of being an hour or 2 hour class in a block schedule, it is a 25 minute question and answer where you just go and it's one-on-one time with your teacher and the students. And that way, instead of having only 6 classes per day, you could get through 9 or 10 classes and you'd get that online rich environment, but you'd also get the in-classroom time with the teachers that students need to fully learn the subject.
So it's essentially a hybrid system, which I do think that obviously any sort of hybrid system that we talk about, you can take the pros from each side. I definitely agree that would be something nice to see. And again, this is just the first stage of this education reform. Everything gets reformed multiple times. That could be something that this state sees in the future with this public education.
One of the provisions of Luna's bill is that every high school student be provided with a laptop. As someone who wants to be a teacher and instruct high school students in the classroom, what role do you think technology should play in a classroom, gents?
I think technology should be a huge part of the classroom, and it really increases your ability to learn. But I don't know if giving every ninth grader a laptop is going to be the best bet, unless we're doing that hybrid system where they're using those laptops on a daily basis for all their classes. If in the current plan, they only have to take 2 classes online, and most people will knock that out in 1 semester, probably their senior year. And so the other 3 years, they're just getting a free laptop, and that's not actually helping their education at all. They're playing games on it. They're doing other things. And I think actual in-classroom technology should increase, which there is a provision in this bill to increase that. And I think that's a really key feature of this bill, is that teachers will get clickers and smart boards and projectors and in-classroom labs, along with some different question and answer systems that I've seen in the works in a couple of the schools up where I grew up in Sandpoint, where they can do quizzes, like a 10-question quiz in literally like 5 minutes. It can be graded. They can see exactly how long each person took to answer the question. And I've seen a lot of teachers use this for attendance too, where they can do a quiz and take attendance and get it all done in 5 minutes, where normally with a paper-based system, it takes 10 minutes just to do attendance.
I actually really agree with you on that point. I think it is good to increase technology, but I also agree that I don't think laptops are the best way to go, especially where the money used to spend that, like to support that, is coming out of teachers. We're losing teachers in this plan. So, again, you can't have all this technology and all these options without having someone there to provide further instruction.
And see, the only thing, I for the most part, the big thing is technology needs to be increased. And, you know, the reason this reform is so huge is that Idaho is pretty far back in a lot of rankings and ratings of public education. And so this is a reform that they figure may work, may not, but technology first and foremost has to increase in this state. I'm lucky enough to be from Washington, where we have the Gates Foundation, which will literally give every school as much technology as they would like. Idaho doesn't have that luxury. So the big argument that I have with kind of the pro laptops, and maybe it's not pro laptops, but not being so against it, is the fact that, yeah, these kids are going to take two online classes, and there may be 3 years where they're not being used for that purpose. But I'm going to disagree with Jen. They're not just going to be on Facebook and playing games. You can't always get stuff done in the classroom and during your school time. We all know that. This will allow you to take work home with you, be able to work on it outside of that classroom setting. A lot of kids do work better individually in kind of a quiet study space. It's not that I'm completely for these laptops, because I do think there is the ability of distraction, but that's with any technology. I do think it opens up some doors where maybe they can do stuff outside of and enhance their learning, because being able to fully use technology and have it readily available isn't just a part of how schools work now, it's a part of really how society works and what they need to do to be better parts of it.
I'm going to disagree with you on that, because I don't think this is Idaho's let's put education first plan, because Idaho has been known for time and time again giving education the lower end of the deal. Like, it's always pushed to the back burner. I think it's a cop-out.
So they're doing something, so that's a cop-out? It's
they're cutting teachers, and they're saying that they're providing more options and providing better opportunities by supplementing the teachers with technology, but they're not doing anything. It's just a cop-out to say, oh, hey, we're putting education first, but we're actually not, because we're hurting your education.
It's more than they've done in the past.
I disagree.
And that wraps up this week's Opinion Roundtable. For KUOI News, I'm Alicia Gurin.
And that's all for today's newscast. Today's show featured music by We Were Promised Jetpacks, an indie rock band from Scotland. For more information on We Were Promised Jetpacks, like their Facebook page. And now here's their track titled Medicine. For KUOI News, I am Britt Kaiser.
I've torn through the pages of the years I have wasted, and I've stolen all my stories, just copied and pasted. Is this about me now? You're still about me now.
Thanks for listening to KUOI News. KUOI News is brought to you by Student Media in conjunction with UI's Argonaut. For more information about news on this program, navigate to KUOI.org or UIArgonaut.com. If you'd like to submit a story to KUOI News, feel free to email us at KUOI@UIdaho.edu or arg-radio@UIdaho.edu. KUOI News is underwritten by UI's own student magazine, Blot. Blot is on stands twice a semester on UI's campus and throughout the Moscow community. For more information about Blot, navigate blot.uidaho.edu. And remember, KUOI News is committed to bringing you the most current news, sports, opinions, and entertainment information within the Moscow community, the country, and the world.